Okay, people, let's begin.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Mind for Survival, a show designed for anyone actively wanting to improve their safety, security, and ability to overcome difficult events.
Acquire basic thought processes to help you in everyday life.
Gain insight through thought-provoking interviews.
Unlock your inner potential. Be confident and increase your capabilities.
This is Mind for Survival with your host, Brian Duff.
Hey everyone, I'm Brian Duff, and welcome to another episode of the Mind for Survival. I am, as always, so stoked that you're here because, hey, anytime that you're here, anytime you're listening to any of the many other great preparedness podcasts out there or watching YouTube channels, getting some preparedness knowledge, heck, even watching the news coverage of the craziness and the tragedy of the hurricanes this week, that gets your mind, especially when you're a preparedness-minded person, it kicks your mind into gear, and you, just by thinking about it, are becoming better prepared. You're thinking about, what would I do? What wouldn't I do? That's something I didn't think about. So thank you for becoming better prepared, because as I always say, you are the person responsible ones in the world that are part of the solution and not part of the problem. So with that, in today's episode, I want to discuss a topic that I think this is going to be a fun topic. It's about must-know emergency medical training that everybody should have. This is something that I think is emergency medical training, first aid, and we'll get into all this stuff, is super important because you can start learning this and you can start teaching it to your kids. Kids can learn this stuff. I mean, Boy Scout, Girl Scouts, whatever the kids youth organization is, you can learn, they can learn CPR and first aid. And once you get that down, you have that knowledge for the rest of your life. Maybe you take a first aid class in the Boy Scouts, and then later on you go take a more in-depth first aid class from, say, Red Cross or somewhere else, and we'll talk about that. You're just magnifying that over the years, reinforcing that good training. So that way if something happens, if you know your kid or your a loved one, a family member, a stranger, you're out hiking, someone breaks an arm, breaks a leg, does something, you have an idea about what to do, and even better, what not to do. Because when it comes to medical treatment and treating people that have problems or trauma, medical issues, not doing something can sometimes be a good thing. Because sometimes people think about doing something that's probably not the right thing. And so instead of doing it, not doing it because they're like, I'm not sure about this, might be a good thing. Not doing something like unnecessarily moving a victim until their wounds are stabilized if you have the ability and time, that kind of thing. That's all important. And it's also important because the two things, when we talk about survival and I look at my survival pyramid, the two things after your situational awareness and after being able to deal with any immediate life threats, like, hey, a car's jumped the curb and heading towards you, or there's a bad guy trying to do something and you need to figure out how to not have the bad guy do whatever it is they're doing. Right after you get past that too, you start dealing with the repercussions of if you didn't avoid the problem. Remember, time and distance kind of thing, right? So the base of the survival pyramid, this is all in alignment with my survival pyramid. Base of the survival pyramid is mindset. You all have a good mindset, as we already discussed, because you're here listening to this, trying to come up with some ways to improve your preparedness. So your mindset, hey, check, we're already there. Situational awareness, you're listening to this podcast. You're gaining knowledge by listening to this, by thinking about it, by going through this different stuff. So you have situational awareness, which if we don't have situational awareness, and you know, within a third of a second, if you don't see that bus heading towards you, you don't notice it when you step off the curb, well, a third of a second without situational awareness can kill you. So while you're listening to this podcast, if you're doing it while you're driving, make sure you just listen and you're still keeping an eye around you, keeping an ear out, right? Because cars are really insulated these days. We don't hear those lights and sirens and horn honking and all that. And if you're not driving right now, and if you're driving, probably go back and do this later, but please don't forget to hit that subscribe button. And if you like this episode, please go out and share it with your friends, family, whoever might be into preparedness. This is all good information for them to have. But 1/3 of a second without situational awareness, man, if we don't pay attention for that brief second, if we're not in tune with what's going around, and we can ratchet situational awareness up, right? We can go through, if we talk about Jeff Cooper's colors codes, we can go from being in the white, which we're, you know, kind of like, I'm not really paying attention to anything because I am unplugged right now and I'm relaxing, I'm enjoying life and I'm not worried about a thing. We can move from that on into the yellow, which means we have a general awareness like, hey, I'm out and about. I'm going to notice for anything that happens to be off the norm, out of the norm, off of my situational baseline. If we notice something's off our situational baseline, what do? We jump up into the orange. Now we've identified something that, oh, that doesn't seem so right over there. I need to be able and be ready to respond to it. And when we see that thing, whatever that thing is we're looking at, say it's the bus coming down the street, and we go, oh, that driver looks like he's having a heart attack and the wheel's swerving for me. Now when we've identified that as a threat coming at us, now we're in the red. That means we are engaged with that. It's a one-on-one. What do I have to do to survive this moment? So that's kind of our alertness as we go throughout our day. So when we talk about situational awareness, that's why that's so important. Once we go from situational awareness in the survival pyramid, the next level is if you don't have safety and security for 3 seconds, if you don't, when you see that bus coming at you and the guy having a heart attack, move out of the way, you know, it might be you're done. We'll see you in the next, in the next life, in the afterlife, whatever you believe in, we might see you there. 3 seconds without safety and security. Safety means, hey, what am I doing to avoid the threat? What am I doing to avoid the problem? Security means now that I haven't avoided the problem, like there's no way I did my best, or maybe I didn't do my best because I was in the white and I wasn't paying attention, whatever that is. When it comes to security, now how do I deal with the problem? How do I minimize the impact of the problem? If you remember back a couple years ago, maybe it was a year and a half, probably 2-3 years ago now, there was that woman in Santa Monica or Venice, California. She was walking down the alley kind of street with her baby in the carriage. And the lunatic dude out there decided he was going to swerve and hit them. And you watch her as he's coming, she moves out of the way. She's trying to keep time and distance from in front of that. She moves out of the way. And when it becomes apparent that he's going to hit her and her baby, she places her body between the car and her baby stroller, and she lifts her baby stroller up as she gets hit by the car. She did the best she could. She did everything she could to avoid it. There was nowhere to go in this alley. Then once she realized she couldn't avoid it, she did everything she could for security to minimize the impact of what was happening. So once we get past that, 3 seconds without that, the next layer on the survival pyramid is oxygen. And oxygen means anything that we can do to make sure we keep oxygen going to our brain, or that our friends, loved ones, or people, anybody we're that we might want to render aid to or that we care about, trying to make sure that oxygen goes to their brains as well. Because without oxygen to your brain, you can start suffering irreversible brain damage within 3 minutes. If you spill enough blood, oxygen carrying blood on the ground, it can pump out fast enough with a good arterial bleed to bleed out in about 2 minutes. So 2 to 3 minutes, you want to be Johnny on the spot and make sure someone has oxygen going to their brain and that their wounds are all closed up. So that's that third, that or the, not third level pyramid, but that's that level, that's the pyramid, that's oxygen, right? And so 3 minutes without oxygen, man, it's a bad day. We're starting to have a bad day. So with that, the 3 minutes without oxygen is an indicator to treat life-threatening wounds and problems, immediate life-threatening wounds. If at some point when we get into doing triage, the people that are the priority are the people with immediate life-threatening wounds. Like, hey, this person needs work right now and we can save them. Sometimes there are people that can't be saved. So they don't get to go on the chopper, right? Like we have to focus on what is triage. You're doing more with less, right? You have limited resources and you're trying to manage a larger scene than you have resources for. So you do the best and you put your resources where they're most useful and most helpful. And so when it comes down to the immediate, this is the person like we're talking about. This is the March algorithm. Right. And the March algorithm, it starts with massive bleeding. Why does it start with massive bleeding? Because like I just said, you can bleed to death in 2 to 3 minutes. So you need to know how to treat massive bleeding. Therefore, we need to have some kind of emergency bleeding control course because, again, you can die, you can bleed to death in just a few minutes, and knowing how to stop massive bleeding, therefore knowing how to stop it, is crucial. You need to know how to use a tourniquet, how to apply direct pressure, how to pack wounds, right? That's the bread and butter of this. How to get a good what's a good hemostatic dressing? People are still talking sometimes. I hear it out here in the different Facebook groups. People are still talking about quick clot granules and all that. And first of all, they stopped making quick clot granules years ago. And I'm pretty much guarantee if you have quick clot granules, the kind we used to just pour in the wound when we were still figuring this stuff out, those kind are probably all expired. And yeah, someone's going to say, well, you can use it after expiration date. Sure, maybe. But the problem is when you pour those granules in there, now they have to go in there when they operate on that person to fix them. Because remember, when we're in the field, we're not fixing. We're putting them in stasis. We're trying to keep it from getting worse. And if we can, improve it a little bit. But when it comes to trauma, the doctor has to fix that. Someone who knows what they're doing usually has to fix that. How do they set the bones? How do they go in there if they're dying from trauma? How do they go fix the organs and tape, and not tape up, but how do they go suture up everything and know what has to go to where and what all the parts go? So it's super critical if we're using a hemostatic agent that when we pour it in, we don't pour it in there anymore because they have to debride that. They have to go in there and cut live tissue out to clean it all out because that stuff adheres to it really tight. So look for, as we're talking about massive hemorrhage here and such, you want to find the quick clot kind of sponges. There's different brands out there, right? Hemostatic sponges you push in there. It's impregnated with the hemostatic agent and it does the thing, but it does it as a sponge that the doctor can pretty much pull out and not have any problems, but it gets in there, it expands, it helps seal everything off. It's good to go. And when you pair that with pressure dressings and some Z-folded packing dressings and stuff like that for packing wounds, you can get in there and really do a good job with that, right? So whether it's a car accident, a workplace mishap, something more severe, maybe the balloon's gone up and it's Civil War Part Two. It's the balloon's gone up, China's done this, Russia's done that, and the world's gone to mayhem. Put whatever scenario you want. Hey, I know. How about you're someone down in Florida right now and you're about ready to get bombed with Milton and something comes flying through your window, or you go outside to take care of something and a 100-mile-an-hour broom smacks into you. That kind of treatment, right? That might need some emergency bleeding control. And so emergency bleeding control type training helps you take quick action to save someone's life. And the good thing when you're talking tourniquets and bleeding control, once you get it under control and you know that you have it under control, and you've done your whole assessment, you know there it's not bleeding from anywhere else, you're doing your follow-up on your patient, you're usually pretty good. It's kind of like a mad minute or two when you're trying to get that all under control. But once it's done, you're like, I just need to monitor and maintain. Now, you need to be ready for that mad minute again in case something you did comes, gets kind of messed up or something, it kind of comes undone somehow. So you don't want this person up and doing a lot if you can avoid it. But if they have to move, you got a tourniquet on their arm or something like that. Again, this is why you get advanced medical training, so you can make informed judgments about this kind of stuff. I think when it comes to medical training that you get, I don't know at what age, like the whole concept of tourniquets and direct pressure and that is appropriate for kids. Hey, that's up to you and your kids and coming up with that decision. But I do know, because we'll get into CPR, that CPR is totally appropriate. I think I took my first CPR stuff at 14, 16 years old, maybe, when I became a lifeguard. You can consider this type of training, the emergency bleeding control training. It's once you know this stuff and you're familiar with it and you practice on it, maybe go back and take a class every couple of years on it to keep your skills up and keep on top of things. It's like an insurance policy for these kind of situations. And having the right skills and having some of the equipment around can truly make the difference between life and death. And I'll tell you, the average person, when I say average, I mean odds are that on the bell curve of life, you're never going to see an arterial bleed that you need to stop with a tourniquet, following these algorithms with wound packing, pressure dressings, and all this stuff. You're never going to see it. But if you do see it, you don't have a whole bunch of time to figure it out. You can bleed to death in 2 to 3 minutes. So knowing what you're doing is important. So getting this training. Now, where do you get this training at, right? Well, one great place to get the training at is stopthebleed.org. It's a great place, right? The training is low cost, and it's basic, but it gets you thinking in the mindset. And once you get that basic, the basics of it down, I think the basic Stop the Bleed course that they teach, I prefer longer courses. Like I prefer courses to be more in depth, but the basic Stop the Bleed course from stopthebleed.org is a couple of hours. And who doesn't? And usually, quite often, they might be $10, but quite often they're free. And my thing is, 2 hours? Come on. We waste more than 2 hours on Facebook screaming at someone we're never going to meet, who's never going to change their mind. And in many cases, might even be a bot. So think about that. Think about stopthebleed.org for some training to start your emergency bleeding control journey. If you already have Stop the Bleed training, think about going back, find a course, go back 2 hours, 4 hours, half a day, whatever. Dude, it will pay off dividends if anyone that you know is around you or you ever become hurt with a serious massive bleed. Next, going back to talk about basic life support. And this is something, again, that you can start at a young age teaching CPR. And the thing with CPR, it's changed, right? Basic life support, BLS, it's changed over the years here and there. But the concepts are still the same. That person with their heart stopped, or they also teach you how to deal with some respiratory issues, right? Like if somebody's choking, how to clear that airway. So what are you trying to do on this one? Whereas the massive bleeding, their blood is carrying their oxygen out of their body and onto the ground and not to the brain. Basic life support, there's something obstructing the system, either something to do with the airway and their lungs, or they're not breathing, they're in respiratory arrest, or whatever's happened has put them also in cardiac arrest. Regardless, they're not getting oxygen to the brain. And as we know, within 3 minutes, you can start suffering irreversible brain damage. And while there's some people out there, some resources that say you can go 10 or 15 minutes before you're dead, I'm here to tell you, most of us, if we go much past 3, 4, 5 minutes, like, yeah, we're killing brain cells. Like we're burning some brain matter up. So again, this is something where we need to get them going quick. And what is the concept here? Either clearing their airway if they have an obstruction, so that way you can get air into their lungs. Hopefully in that case that their heart's still beating because the heart's still circulating. So now it's mouth to mouth, give them some mouth to mouth, get some oxygen into them and use a mask. Hey, we all know that we have to be careful of body substance isolation because people have the heebie-jeebies, the creepy cruds and everything in between, right? So if it's your loved one, if it's a son, a daughter, a wife, and you have no problem locking lips with that person, get down and lock lips. If not, carry some sort of mask. Do what you can not to have to lock lips. Hey, here's the thing you could do. I pulled this on a buddy one time on a construction site when a guy we were working with went down because he gotten told don't show up drunk to work anymore. So the guy didn't drink the night before. And because he was a stone cold raging alcoholic, next morning he showed up. And we worked them all day. It was hot Georgia day. We're literally digging post holes all day with post hole diggers and augers. And by the end of the day, that dude was done. We were digging the last hole. He ends up falling out into a pile of concertina wire that was off on the side of the road that this rancher had used to kind of, to help keep his people off of his field. Anyhow, long story short, as we get down, this dude, he wasn't breathing. And my boss looks at me and says, "What do we do?" And I looked at him and this dude had a nasty mouth. Like he wasn't having a good day. And I don't think on his best day that he managed to fight too hard with a toothbrush. So I looked at my boss and I'm like, "You got to do mouth to mouth." My boss looked at me and he says, "This dude's going to die." Well, luckily right then that dude took a breath. And so we were all right. Well, he lived. But somebody, if you want to save the person, needs to get oxygen in their system. and gets it circulating. Now, some of the CPR in recent years, before you had to, you know, they wanted you really to do the respirations and they wanted you to do the compressions, get it all circulating. Now there's, you know, hey, they already have oxygen in their system, so get that heart going. If their heart's not beating, get the heart going so you're pumping blood through that system. But again, you need to get some oxygen in that tank so that person gets oxygen to their brain. And yeah, you can fix somebody that has a massive wound from with a tourniquet, but there's nothing like when you, I guess maybe delivering a baby might be like it. That's a pretty cool thing. But I've had a few saves in my life when it came to CPR and back, you know, defibrillating people and all that. Back in the day when paramedics looked cool, where we'd use the paddles and all that stuff on it. And there's nothing so cool as showing up and seeing a person that's dead. Like, they're not breathing. Their heart's not beating. Like, they are dead. Like, you could fill out the death certificate pretty much. Like they're done. Like, nothing's happening. If it doesn't work out, like some craziness doesn't work out right now, they're not coming back. And you get down on that person. You start pumping and people are doing respirations. Like in the case, my very first save was a nurse and a deputy sheriff were at a church. It was right around the corner from the fire station. But we get there, they're doing CPR on this guy. Get down there, do the first shock. Nothing. Still going. Keep doing CPR. We had taken over. Do the second shock. And beep, beep. There he goes. His heart started beating. By the time we dropped that guy off in the emergency room, like 15 minutes later, and we're packing up our gear and leaving, which, hey, on forward, we didn't have to use a whole lot of our gear. It worked out pretty well. When we were leaving, that guy was sitting on the edge of the bench arguing with the doctor that he wanted to get back to the dance. And he had just been dead. And I watched this guy come to life in front of us. Like, he's like, what's going on? I'm like, dude, you're dead, but you're alive now. It's a miracle. So anyhow, getting basic life support skills, that's something, knowing how to do CPR, especially with your kids, right? Like, your kid's going to, maybe their grandparents are still alive or their great grandparents. They're around old people their whole life. They're around people their whole life. And knowing that skill, heck, if you got kids, you're going to be an old person one time around them. Them knowing that skill, learning that skill now might save your life later on, or their sister, their brothers, whoever's lives. So again, in a crisis, when someone isn't breathing or has their heart stopped, and you got like 3 minutes, this is what it takes to get it there. This is where you need to start. And you can go to the American Heart Association website at heart.org and clicking on Learn CPR, or you could go straight to the CPR section on their website, which is cpr.heart.org. Either way, that gets you the American Heart Association. Great place. It's where I first learned how to do CPR. All right, next up, let's talk about first aid. So we've gone through the survival pyramid, 1/3 of a second without situational awareness. We started with mindset. Then we go 3 seconds without safety and security. And then 3 minutes without oxygen to the brain, right? That's why we have that level there. Next, what's next if we're thinking the survival rule 3, same in the survival pyramid, 3 hours without shelter. And what's shelter typically? Shelter means, hey, we got to protect ourselves from the environment and doing all that. But what is shelter when it comes to how do we think about shelter? Everything up to that point in the survival pyramid is all about something that's happened immediately. It's happening right now. I didn't avoid it. In situational awareness, I didn't avoid it in safety. I dealt with it in security. If it was an immediate life-threatening medical issue, I dealt with it in oxygen. So now what does that mean? It means now we deal with the stuff that's not life-threatening. A broken bone, depending on the situation, isn't a life-threatening thing that you're going to treat right away. Right? There's other priorities. If you still have an active threat happening, you need to deal with that active threat as much as possible. Now, dealing with that active threat may mean like, hey, I need to stabilize my broken arm, my busted wing kind of things. But we're talking about more of the delayed first aid here. This is where if we look at the oxygen level, like, hey, trying to get oxygen in your mind in the 3 minute window. Well, this side on first aid, this is delayed. If oxygen's the immediate level of triage, these are your delayed patients. These are your walking wounded patients. These are the ones that, hey, I got time to deal with this. Because let's assume you get hurt and it's below freezing out. For whatever reason, you're in this place, it's below freezing out, and you get banged up. Someone gets banged up. Well, now is the time I need to get that person warm. I need to get that person into some sort of shelter because I also have to protect them from the elements. I'll worry about their busted wing later because right now I got to get them warm because they'll die from hypothermia soon in the right condition, that kind of thing. This is the non-life-threatening medical. Well, that's where first aid comes in. And let's face it, this is the one, again, this is the next one I would want to learn and that you could teach a kid and that a kid can take with them forever is you're far more likely to deal with cuts, sprains, and burns than anything else growing up. We're all going to deal with splinters. We're all going to do stupid stuff and cut ourselves. We're all going to, I don't know about you, I am going to wear flip-flops and do something that gets my feet busted up, right? That's just the way I am. I'm the guy that I don't ride, but I got rid of my motorcycle, but I was a knucklehead who ride motorcycle and flip-flops and shorts back in the day, right? So basic first aid covers these kind of situations that you're most likely going to see. There's less gravity to them. You're not having to do CPR. You're not having to slap a tourniquet on real quick and so to save someone's life. But these are the things that you're probably going to see in life. How many people get bonked in the head, you know, me and my cousin digging out in the backyard, my cousin Mark with a claw hammer. And I looked over his shoulder, bat pops me in the head, splits my head open kind of thing. Right. Wasn't his fault, just the way it works out, but that's what you're going to deal with. So while advanced first aid and all this goes deeper, because when we're talking about first aid, there's basic first aid and there's more advanced first aid. And what's more advanced first aid? You just get more practice at it. You're learning more techniques, right? And you can think of advanced first aid as an emergency medical responder level, like someone that's kind of been trained. They're going to do some work around EMS. Maybe it's a cop, a security guard, or something like that. They're going to be around EMS. And so there's a certain level so that they can help and assist if need be. It's a more advanced level than basic first aid. But these skills become vital, especially in long-term emergency and, you know, grid down scenarios. Look at what we're seeing up in North Carolina right now, what we might see down in Florida. I mean, you get back in some of those hills, people are relying on themselves and it's a disaster scene. So people are getting banged up there, you know, from splitting fractures to treating hypothermia and heat injuries are something good to know about. This learning first aid, that's your toolkit for the everyday and the unexpected, right? And having these skills really helps make you more self-reliant and it helps make you that person that it's kicking your mind at dealing with emergencies by thinking about how do I deal with this broken bone? How do I deal with this person that's hurt? As you start thinking about this stuff, you're getting more mentally prepared to deal with emergencies. You're doing your what if scenarios. So for basic first aid courses and advanced first aid courses, the emergency medical responder course, I'd head over to redcross.org. They do for good first aid courses. You can get in there and look at their basic first aid. I think it's first aid steps. And get some basic first aid. And then once you get confident with that, and if you're still feeling the itch, go get your emergency medical response, your emergency medical responder certificate too, or training, right? That's going to get you a higher level of training so you'd be more capable. Again, that is redcross.org. So next up, let's talk about more advanced trauma management. And I'll tell you, here's the thing with trauma. Trauma is fairly easy. I when I say this, I'm probably taking a little bit of a dunk on myself, but trauma is very easy. I was really good at trauma. I wasn't so hot at the medical stuff. I could run medical calls. You know, I was probably an average paramedic when it came to running medical calls. There's some paramedics out there, man, they're like pretty much inventing medicine. They know so much. But the trauma I was really good with, and trauma, it's a system. Like, hey, I need to do a head-to-toe assessment. I need to figure out like what is wrong, what's not working right, what's broken, what can I stabilize, what can I fix, how can I improve this situation. So it's very systematic. Some of these courses, when you first take them, they're really stressful, but they're not that stressful. It's everything's a system, and the best way to learn it is to practice. Go through your patient assessment over and over, head to toe, over and over again. Learn it like the back of your hand. Do it. Practice it with a couple of buddies, man. You know, get some people together and practice it when you get into this and you start learning it and memorize it. And eventually you practice it enough, it just becomes second nature. And you'll see it's really not that difficult. But again, when you first start doing this stuff, yeah, it can be a little bit intimidating. The two big courses when it comes to more advanced trauma management. Now there's courses like advanced trauma life and different things like that, ATLS. But the two big courses that you can look at taking is TECC, which stands for Tactical Emergency Casualty Care, and TCCC, Tactical Combat Casualty Care. These courses are designed for emergencies that require more advanced trauma management capability. They're designed to get you more thinking about the scene safety, what's going on, how do you keep yourself safe, what not to do so you don't get injured, right? That's one of the things with Tactical Combat Casualty Care. What don't you do? If you're, and this is, and I know this is getting way deep for some of you who aren't into this kind of thing, but this is for use if there's combat going on, if there's a shootout going on. You don't run out to try to save someone that just got shot, because wherever they just got shot, if you run out there, you could probably get shot because that they just got shot there. And so someone has, you know, that ability to shoot at people right there. So the trick on that is we have to deal with the threat first. Eliminate this active threat that's trying to injure us, trying to harm us. While we're doing that, have that person that's injured try to pull themselves, get themselves out of the line of fire and administer any self-aid that they can administer. If they're conscious, they need a tourniquet, put a tourniquet on. Do whatever. If it's not too serious, maybe just lay there and play dead. Whatever the situation calls for. But as the caregiver, if you run out there and get hurt, now you're the person who needs care. Do you have another caregiver with you? Do you have another one that has your training or better? You know, when I got busted up in Iraq, that was my issue. I was the medic. I'm the one that get busted up. They did a good job though, man. They all did. They really did a good job once they picked me up off the ground. So with that, these are both put on by an organization. And now there are trainers around the country that do these classes, but it's through the National Association of EMTs. And so Tactical Emergency Casualty Care and Tactical Combat Casualty Care can both be found at naemt.org. That's National Association of EMTs.org, naemt.org. Go check those out. Those are great classes if you plan on being someone that does trauma medicine, trauma care in a non-permissive or semi-permissive environment. In other words, hey, we have to be careful out here while we're doing this stuff because there's bad people running around. Those are two really good classes. And you learn some really good stuff. Part of what you learn there is they put the pressure on you. That's why, again, people, it's like, hey, when you first take it and you're not used to it, it can be a little bit of an intimidating course. But if you block everything out that's happening around you, all the stressors that they try to put on you and the stress of the test and everything they're doing, you can get through it and you'll be that much better off. Next one is, and this is one I think a lot of people should get as well, especially if you're into hiking, anything to do in the wilderness. This is wilderness first aid. Now, we all know, especially with recent events, is Mother Nature isn't so forgiving. You don't fight Mother Nature. If you fight Mother Nature, you either get lucky or Mother Nature, you know, you might be really skillful what you're doing, but Mother Nature quite often wins, right? So if you spend your time outdoors or plan to, you know, I don't know, if your emergency plan in case something ever happens to your home is to head out to the wilderness, Wilderness First Aid teaches you to treat injuries when you're miles away from help. It teaches you different, because you have different considerations. You're miles away from help. What does that look like? Where's your response coming from? What can I use for field expedient ways to help this person, to move this person, all that kind of stuff. It focuses on improvising treatments with limited supplies, and it makes a really smart addition to anyone who likes to venture off the beaten path or is in their mind saying, hey, the world may go, you know, upend on itself. And I want to have the ability to do this. I want to know this information. That it's a really good course as well. You can think of it as a blend of kind of survival skills and medical skills, because you'll get a little bit of both being out there in the wild. And so you can go get those courses at places like the Red Cross, and REI has some two-day courses that you can go attend, wilderness first aid courses. And lastly is psychological first aid. Now let's not forget that medical emergencies, disasters, the things we're preparing for as preppers and preparedness-minded people can all take a toll on our mental health. I'm living proof of that. Psychological first aid equips you with the skills to offer emotional support and guidance during these times of stress, learning how to stay calm an anxious person, how to recognize signs of mental trauma, and how you can provide a sense of safety, a sense of security, and get that person to, you know, to calm down, to relax, to start dealing with the problems, to start working their way through it. And if we're talking about some of these major disasters or these society-ending events for the people that are on that side of the preparedness world, this is a really important one. Because at the end of the day, we all go through some stuff in our life at points. Right? Maybe not everybody. I don't know. Maybe you have the golden life or you know someone that does. And man, whew, I'm happy for those people. That must be amazing. But most of us, we get mentally banged up throughout life. So understanding psychological first aid, understanding how to help with that, that's a big one. And it's not only a big one from helping other people, but you can help yourself. When you understand it and you're going through it, you're going, oh, that's what's happening. Let me go in and use some of these techniques on me. On this one, I don't have a specific link for you. What I recommend is do a Google search and see what comes up online that you like best that suits your needs and ability, because there's a bunch of different ones out there. And, you know, sometimes the psychological stuff, this kind of stuff can be a little woo. So you need to find one that works for you. So with that, everybody, I hope that makes sense. I hope that helped get some people's minds to think, oh, maybe I'll go do this, get this training. Every little bit that you do, just listening to this podcast, listening to their podcast, like I said at the beginning, helps improve your preparedness. And hey, thanks again for my audio. We're moving a couple weeks closer. We're getting closer to me being finished up. Teaching the next class up at Mountain and Readiness Expo and getting back home to where I get my fancy podcasting mic back and I sound normal again. And so with that, everybody, if you like this episode, please, as always, go ahead and leave me an honest 5-star rating review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, whatever app you listen to it. It really helps the show. I love it when I see I got a little tick from one of you. It motivates me. And if you have any questions, you want me to talk about something in the show, please email me at Brian@mind4survival.com. Once again, that's Brian@mind4survival.com, and I'll do my best to answer your questions as soon as possible. So with that, everybody, as always, stay safe, secure, and prepared. And never forget, you, my friends, are just one prep away from being better prepared. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Mind for Survival podcast at www.mindforsurvival.com. That's www.mind4survival.com.